around the top.
Receiving this message. We are Ken Jennings and John Roderick. We speak to you from our present, which we can only assume is your distant past, the turbulent time that was the early 21st century.
Fearing the great cataclysm that will surely befall our civilization, we began this monumental reference of strange and obscure human knowledge. These recordings represent our attempt to compile and preserve wonders and esoterica that would otherwise be lost.
So whether you're listening from an advanced civilization or have just reinvented the technology to decrypt our transmissions, this is our legacy to you.
This is our time capsule. This is the Omnibus.
You have accessed entry 126.JB1304, certificate number 11904, Bitcoin Pizza Day.
So we all agree change is bad.
Progress doesn't work.
Ponzi scheme.
Fad.
So how much Bitcoin do you own?
Let me check. Let me just look and see how it's doing today. I own zero Bitcoin.
Zero Bitcoin. I also own zero Bitcoin.
Ooh, our investments are kind of matching each other.
Then. Yeah. Do you remember when you first heard of Bitcoin?
I don't, but it was years and years ago.
Yeah.
Where it was, hey, this is a new crazy thing.
Yeah.
Why should governments have anything to do with currency?
Why indeed?
And in the following decade, we have discovered.
I was early adopter of Twitter, and I was lurking on 4chan a lot during those days. And
what could go wrong?
I know, what could go wrong? And it was before 4chan became a complete cesspool back when it was like only 90% a cesspool. And a sex pool.
You were there for the sex pool, and then it became a cesspool.
Yeah. And so in 2009, when Bitcoin first arrived on the scene, I don't think I was aware of it in 2009, but quickly thereafter, I started to read about it. And you know, the 4chan bros were very much early adopters of every kind of that sort of...
No way.
If you can believe it. And I remember, you know, distinctly when Bitcoin was valued at only a few cents or, you know, less than 50 cents. And thinking, you know, what's the worst that can happen? I should buy some of these. And then thinking, you know, it just feels like throwing $500 into the garbage to buy 1,000 of these.
So super fun. Oh, right. Yeah, no, that's different for you. That's a different emotion for you than
yeah,
for me.
Yeah, no, $500 that you spend on cigars and steaks makes perfect sense to me, but $500 to buy these dumb things. And then, of course, when they were worth a dollar, it seemed like, wow, you know, I missed my chance. 500 of them isn't ever going to be worth anything. $500 being, you know, the most I typically invest in anything.
Now, and remind me of the timeline here. The far future is not going to have tracked the beginning of Bitcoin as closely as you. How long ago?
Are you sure?
Yes, I'm quite certain. How long ago would this have been?
2010.
Okay. This is literally the ground floor.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, 2010, 2011. But, you know, then it...
I think I was a few years later.
It went from a dollar to... $100 pretty fast,
yes.
I, you know, in that first few years, but then it kind of petered along at 100, 200, 300, up and down, and even when it was $100, and it seemed like, wow, buying 50 of these would be, that's a substantial amount of money. That's one homeowner monetary unit. You could put a new roof on the barn for $5,000.
I mean, you probably have that just in ingots sitting by your door.
Yeah. Sure.
But you, I mean, but you wanted to keep it in door ingots.
It felt to me like a silver ingot was a better investment. And the thing is, I understood the concept because I had it explained to me by all the teenagers who were busy doxing cheerleaders with 1,000 pizzas. I had it explained, and it's not hard to understand. Basically, it's the idea of a return to the gold standard. It's a finite thing. All money is fake, as we know, and money is made more fake all the time by the fact that governments just print more of it.
And sometimes when I draw little mustaches on the presidents.
That's right. If you stamp your $20 bills with a stamp that says this is a timber dollar, and we eat spotted owls up here in Packwood, it invalidates the money.
I just put my little sovereign citizen stamp on it. I pick a word that begins with a vowel and then a consonant or whatever, and then all the money's mine. Your phone is always a submarine.
Well, and you know what's crazy about this phone call is it says that it's my personal banker at Wells Fargo calling, maybe calling me to say that he invested all my minimal savings in Bitcoin.
Like, did it say the name, or does it just say my personal banker at Wells Fargo on your phone screen?
No. It has his name too, okay. And I have no idea why. I guess it's in my. Okay, and I don't know. This is the third time he's called me, and I always let it go to voicemail. So I don't know what he wants.
I could never.
Something to do with my money, I guess.
All that copper mine you got into, that emerald mine in Namibia is not paying off.
The reason that I have a personal banker is that he was my mother's, and she conned him into dealing with me. I do not meet the financial requirements to have a personal banker.
Your mom's like, add two zeros.
Yeah, come on. And then it's my boy. And, you know, everybody loves my mom. All the her hairstylist will agree to cut my hair, but I never want my hair cut.
Well, you both have to agree.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing.
A haircut has to be consensual for both parties.
My dad had all these relationships, consent. Right? He knew he had his own guy at the hardware store. You know, he had a cobbler, but none of those relationships transferred to me.
I just find it a little upsetting how insistent your phone ring is. Like, it seems very urgent. When your phone rings, like most people have kind of a soothing melody. But
what's your phone do?
I don't even know. Whatever the default is.
Na, 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 na.
Yeah, that's right. But can you imagine your phone rings and it's like, beep, 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 beep. There's a torpedo heading at you?
Mine does.
In the shape of a personal banker?
Every phone call is like a torpedo headed at me.
I mean, that's more accurate.
I'm the HMS Prince of Wales.
That's how I react to phone calls. Like, what could happen now?
Yeah. It actually should say, beep.
so I can hold up a little Wile E. Coyote song that says, oh dear, just in time.
Beep, beep, beep.
So have you done the math? Like what your hypothetical non-silver ingot?
1,000 times I've done the math over the years. I mean, back when Bitcoin was $1,000, I did the math and was like, no!
But in the last few months, you probably feel pretty good. The math's getting more in your favor.
Well, no, I mean, even...
The multiplier still...
Yeah, I mean, it's... Bitcoin's at $20,000 when we record this episode. And if I had bought 1,000 Bitcoin, I think you can add zeros to 20,000 as well as I. But, you know, the high water mark, whenever you talk about one of these things, you always have to resort to the high water mark because not only should I have bought Bitcoin at 50 cents, I should have sold
3 months ago
at $65,000 a Bitcoin. Although it's now 20,000, every time I talk about somebody that actually got rich, I'm always going to refer back to that high water mark.
Because they all sold on that day, I'm sure.
I'm sure they all did. No, they didn't. That's why they're crying like a bunch of babies right now.
I don't think I've told this story before. I was on some internet forum. Like this first entered my consciousness maybe a year ago, where I was on some internet forum where somebody was asked, you know, it's just some stupid Reddit prompt, like, what's your greatest regret? And I really started thinking a lot about this. Were you and I talking about this? Maybe I did this on this show. Like, what would your greatest regret be? And I was thinking, well, you know, like when my grandma was like in the home, I should have gone every week, you know, like stuff like that, stuff where it's too late. Real Mike and the Mechanics, living years kind of emotional stuff.
In my case, it's like they're the top five are all like girls I should have asked if they wanted to make out. Do you want to make out? I should have said that, you know, over the years.
Well, unless one of them was my grandma, we have different
yeah, we do.
We have different targets of our regret. But I was going through the thread, and it was amazing how many of these young, I almost think it was like some religious setting. It was like some, it was like some, you know, like a Sunday school kind of a forum or something. And going through the chat, it was amazing how many of them were not like, you know, I should have told my dad I loved him. You know, right. I should have, when my dog got sick, we should have just gone to the park every day. You know, you'd think that's what it would be.
I should have quit drinking 6 years ago.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, personal moral behavior, pretty much two thirds of them, because, you know, it was an internet thing. So it trended young and it trended male. Two thirds of them were like, why didn't I buy Bitcoin? Why didn't I buy Bitcoin? Well, I should have bought Bitcoin. Well, I could have. And it's clear that this was a generational trauma for a lot of these people, that they are raised with the idea that their last chance at the middle class came and went because of what's. And this is something that's been true in every generation. You could always look back and be like, well, if I'd bought Microsoft at, you know, or.
Right. IBM.
Why didn't I just buy IBM the generation before that? Why didn't I buy IBM? So there's always been this thing. But this seemed like a real trauma for these people, presumably because of what's happened in capitalism since then, where it seems like most policy decisions are made purely to eradicate the middle class and concentrate wealth elsewhere. A lot of people seem to think like that was the thing. My life would have been good if I had made this one crypto transaction, and instead my life is bad. Or the hard drive with my Bitcoins on it is in a dump and I lost the password.
Well, we get criticized a lot, not criticized. We get a lot of comments in Futurelings fora about how we don't do enough millennial topics. And I do feel like this is a particularly millennial topic.
It's also, by the way, an anniversary omnibus entry.
That's right. This is our 500th episode.
500th entry.
And I propose to you that we do the 500th entry as a an entry about the omnibus podcast.
Then end the show.
Where I told you all about it and you acted as though you'd never heard of it. But you kind of, you know.
This was the kind of sustained improv that I could not do for 20 seconds without cringing.
You didn't do enough theater sports in the 80s to be able to pull that off.
That's
for an hour.
Exactly right. I mean, I've realized since then that you will do every anniversary show on this show.
Right.
Because there are, you know, if we do every other, if you've noticed, John presents every other show. I present the...
I'm always
Tuesday
even,
ones.
And you're
He's always
odd.
Thursday, which means if you're numbering them, I'm always odd.
Right. Although you'll get all the prime numbers.
I was thinking, what is the closest thing to an anniversary show that is an odd number? And I still don't know.
What's our next prime after 500?
I don't know.
Come on. It's not 501. Come on, genius.
501's divisible by 3.
I think that in addition to the... you know, the decline and fall of the middle class. I think that there's also within millennial culture, things really changed for them in terms of what extraordinary wealth looked like.
You mean it was more in their face?
Well, just that it was more outrageous. I mean, if it was 1880,
The richest guy you know has a nicer stick pin on his tie.
Well, it was certainly possible to become extremely wealthy, but you had to own steel plants and railroads. When we were kids, and when I was in high school, if you made $50,000 a year, you were a lawyer or a doctor, right? The first time I heard of someone making $100,000 a year, I think I was gobsmacked.
And I don't remember Gen X doing as much glamorizing of the super wealth.
Because there were hardly any of those people, and they still seemed to be they were industrialists, right? They were making things.
And I was very, it kind of seemed like, you know, back then the waning boomer optimist of the time was that everything will be fine. You know, you'll go to college and you'll get some nice office job. And you will be so comfy. Like, everybody's going to be good.
Yeah, it was
the opposite of the doomer vibe today.
Going to college was a direct path to betterment, right?
And a good enough betterment. Yeah. Like, look at that nice house you're going to have. I'm going to make, if I'm a lawyer, what if I made $50,000 a year?
And we talk about this, that the CEOs at the time made $200,000 a year. And that was just like, holy, what couldn't you buy?
We were not a nation of shareholders
right
at the time.
And I remember the first conversation I had in the mid-90s with who would I guess be now considered an older millennial who was in the Microsoft sphere. And I remember saying like, well, what's your plan? You know, like I'm trying to be a rock musician and he was rock adjacent, I think, as a fan primarily. I said, you know, what's your career arc? And he said, well, I'm going to be a millionaire by the time I'm 27, and then I'm going to retire and devote myself to Habitat for Humanity or something. And I laughed and said, what kind of life goal is that? Like, you're not going to be you can't just say I'm going to be a millionaire by the time I'm 27.
That's what you say in show and tell when you're like 8.
Yeah. Like, what are you even talking about? That's you're basically saying I'm going to win the lottery.
I'm going to have a flying car and live under the ocean.
And he looked at me kind of like, I don't think you understand. I'm going to be a millionaire by the time I'm 27.
Did he show you his portfolio?
Well, no. And who knows? I mean, I knew a lot of people that worked in software then that aren't millionaires.
Yeah.
Yeah, those guys. But he had ambition. I have lost touch with him. I don't know if he's a millionaire.
Are you listening? Do you remember this conversation, sir? Send us your net worth. But not the number. Send us your actual net worth.
But millennials were the first generation, I think, in history where the news was full of examples of their peers who were doing the exact same video gaming that they were doing in college, dropping out after their freshman year and becoming billionaires by starting a company that basically took them a day and a half to program. And, you know, so money became...
You didn't have to own a single mill.
No, right. And you didn't even really have to have family money, although, you know, family money always helps.
That's what got you into Harvard, where you were in the dorms writing your stupid website. But
it seemed like there was at least a decade there where you couldn't open the newspaper without being told that there was a 22-year-old that was refusing to sell their billion-dollar company to Apple because they believed it was going to be worth $40 billion. And so that can't help but become, at least emotionally, standardized in your mind. Like, well, that's what success looks like.
Especially when average household incomes are stagnant or dropping.
Right.
And you're like, wait, so what? Am I the only one that's having a bad month? What?
Yeah, and I'm also, you know, I'm 24. I'm also a genius.
I'm doing all the same things, and yet I'm way less comfy than my parents were. What's wrong with me?
Yeah, exactly. And for you and me, I mean, making $50,000 a year was, I'm not sure I had a goal beyond it, right? Like, the day my mom got a raise over $50,000 a year, we looked at each other. She came home and was like, guess what? I'm making $59,000 a year. And it was like, that's more than my dad ever made in his whole life. It was the day that she surpassed my dad.
Yeah.
Because he had always been.
I hope you guys went to Farrell's.
He had always been the big cheese. And then all of a sudden she was like, guess who's the big cheese now? And it was like I don't think my attitude about money changed until maybe the 2010s that I realized I feel like $1 million that $50,000 was no longer like an extraordinary amount of money.
Yeah, the $1 million joke is kind of a result of this time. Like that's pretty much the first year or two when you would have understood the idea that $1 million is a little bit paltry for a supervillain.
And I have tremendous sympathy for millennials growing up in a time when there was no path to a middle class, but also this incredibly unrealistic, you know, like you're saying, 2/3 of the people on this website are like, I could have bought this pretend money.
One decision would have made me a multimillionaire and I wouldn't be working for the man.
And at that time, $1,000 probably meant a lot to all of those people. They were young, and $1,000 was real money, as it was to me. So buying Bitcoin...
I never had $1,000 in any account until I was out of college.
I was 40 before I had $1,000 that I didn't have, that wasn't spoken for. And that was about this time. I was about 40 or 42, 43.
Luckily today you can just say how many followers you have or want to have. That's
well, at the time that was true for me too, and the number of followers I wanted to have was 7,000.
Right, but that was like you wanted to have a cult in Big Sur.
I mean, basically if you had 7,000 followers then you might as well be, I mean, you were Harrison Ford
Twitter. You were literally more popular than Jesus. Like you were 60 times, yeah. 58 times more popular than Jesus.
Yeah, how many followers did Jesus have? 12?
12 tops.
Yeah. Well, you know, 12, but were they all
on
board? Yeah,
Judas didn't seem super into it.
So Bitcoin, you know, how much of it do you understand? Do you know what a blockchain is?
Like, I don't know the... I can't explain how the algorithm works, but I understand the effect of it, which is that it enforces a certain kind of algorithmic scarcity in the amount of this currency that can be produced, because it takes a substantial amount of computing power working with large numbers, you know, the same way that large numbers revolutionized cryptography, to create a situation where money appears when the algorithm decides it does. And at no other time.
Well, a blockchain is really just a ledger. And
a central accounting of...
Yeah, transactions happen, and they get ordered into a block, and then that block, when it gets full, it gets attached to a chain.
Wait, a blockchain is a chain of blocks?
It's a chain of blocks, and the blocks are a discrete number of transactions. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if your blockchain, like the Bitcoin blockchain, the blocks are all 1 megabyte of data representing a bunch of transactions.
And this is all distributed, so it's everywhere and nowhere?
Yeah, it's visible to everyone. It's completely open source set of transactions, and then it gets clipped onto the chain. It becomes the next link in the chain. And the chain then presumably is eternal and accessible to everyone.
And the virtue of this is that it's immutable, basically. Like the numbers have spoken, and they know there's no disputing who did or said what first, or what happened when, or how much the amount was. The math all follows from the algorithm.
And blockchain after Bitcoin, once it was widely understood, has become a technology, a thought technology, but a real technology that's used by companies, and you know, it's being converted and exploited and you know, used and privatized. I mean, all the things that Bitcoin's blockchain is supposed to provide: transparency and universality. I mean, you can make a blockchain that only your, you know, an internal blockchain, like a network that's available only to the employees of IBM.
This is going to annoy people, but I am a little skeptical about, you know, blockchain technology, you know, how much hype versus how much of a game changer it actually is. I am unconvinced.
Well, this episode is definitely going to annoy certain people, because this is an extremely emotional topic, and people are very passionate about crypto.
Well, they have to be if they can't keep finding new rubes, I mean customers.
Well, crypto, and one of the reasons it's passionate, and one of the reasons that people are yelling at me right now, and I should say, I don't really understand any of this. It's all...
I thought crypto was Superman's dog.
It's all math.
Ba-dum-bum.
And who knows about math? Who knows about computer maths?
I'm just going to hold up the not compatible with Marxism sign, like in a vase. Uh-huh. I'm going to say this whole episode.
The thing about money, and we've talked about this several times on the show, is that when money was no longer backed directly by gold, when we went off the gold standard and money became just sort of fiat money.
It's in a construct. It's an agreed upon delusion.
It really agitated all of the gold standard, gold bug types, who all kind of congregated around a sort of John Birch Society idea of what debt and government and the individual and free speech. I mean, all of these ideas kind of became politicized and tended to be a bête noire or a cause célèbre, one of the two, whichever one you want whatever accent you want to put on it.
If you're a butcher, it's a bête noire.
Yeah.
Right? Because now we can't even trust the government to be good for what it says it's good for.
So the idea of a e-currency was floated decades ago. I think Milton Friedman already suggested that it was the future, because there needed to be, as people envisioned the internet, there also became the possibility of this medium of exchange that wasn't controlled by a government. And so the idea being that it didn't fluctuate in value, or it didn't decline in value, because a government can, I mean, if you think about the number of dollars that we are, that are on the market, as it were, right now, since the year 2000, the number of dollars in the world has gone from $500 billion to $2 trillion. There are four times more dollars.
Just as a result of monetary fiscal policy.
Yeah, just as a result of the United States printing dollars to keep the wheels turning.
Who got the additional, what was it?
Not me, not you.
$1.5 trillion.
It did not go to us. A lot of it went to bailout banks, as we'll see soon. But also it went to eviscerating a middle class. And also, who knows? I mean, it's all, money's just, you know, it's flying around like paper airplanes.
It's in the couch.
People are lighting cigars with it. I mean,
it's buried on islands.
Jeff Bezos's ex-wife has some number of billions of it.
She's given away like more during this show than we will ever have.
Yeah, what is she worth $1 trillion? What even is $1 trillion?
Nobody's worth $1 trillion.
Not yet. When Bitcoin arrived, it really tickled the fancy of this pre-existing sort of political universe that was sort of anti global fiscal policy. And if you can imagine what an anti-globalist gold fixated group thinks about other political topics, just typically when you think of those terms,
let's not generalize, but
it definitely attracted a certain segment of the population that I always have this problem remembering the term.
Libertarianism.
Thank you. Libertarianism.
I think some kind of stage hypnotist made you unable to remember the word libertarian. That's probably good.
I can never think of it. When I sit here, I'm like, it's called the Berber.
Ken, who are those weirdos?
Berber, derber, der, ba, 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 ba. I always think it starts with a B, and it's got a B in it.
We just need to give you a post-it where you can hold up that says, Ken, who are those weirdos?
Who are those weirdos?
And I'll be like, libertarians.
Got the B in your bonnet.
The bee's in the middle. That's what
the bee's in the middle. Thank you. But yeah, so libertarianism really, and cryptocurrency really found a common cause. And libertarians saw in cryptocurrency a kind of future.
It's an end run around government.
It's an end run around government. And it's an end run around then the powers of government to control the individual. Bitcoin or cryptocurrency allows the individual to then become completely autonomous in the globe.
I can put me on my money.
You can put you on your money.
I don't need Andrew Jackson.
And there's a lot of talk, and this is kind of a funny sidebar within the conversation, but there's a lot of talk that because computer code is letters and numbers, symbols, it's a language, that therefore writing computer code is a form of speech, and therefore free speech guarantees in the United States include computer code, so that restricting any attempt to restrict Bitcoin,
that's sovsit nonsense.
It's pretty most oh you just said sovsit and the,
no you said computer code
oh
of all the things that computer code is analogous to, speech is like not in the top 20. 20 if I'm a court.
Yeah. Well, and most of the legal scholars agree that that computer code, when it communicates ideas, may be protected speech. Oh my God.
You're not going
to, what is your thing called? It's called computer, right? Computer, shut up.
You're not going to say the word computer a lot on this, are you?
Oh my God. I hope not.
You can turn it off, right?
You could unplug it. I don't know. I don't even know why it's there. This bunker is really, has been colonized.
It's a rental.
It's been colonized by Barbie RVs and
can you do it voice activated? Hey, computer, don't respond anymore when I say computer.
Thanks for telling me.
Do you think it'll work?
That feels a little passive aggressive.
Let's see if it works. Computer. What's up?
Oh, maybe. Her light went on, but she didn't say anything.
Maybe she's dead. Maybe I confused. Wait. If you say what's up, she starts playing NPR? Is this only in Seattle, or do all Alexas do that?
I don't think that would happen in Wyoming. Computer, be quiet.
Thanks for telling me.
Anyway, computer code that is, you know, that is a machine that's, you know, that effectively is a machine, is not, I think the courts would agree that it was not a form of speech. And certainly you can't, computer, be quiet.
Can we just unplug it?
Would you go unplug it? It's right there and the plug is visible.
Every time this happens, the Facebook board is full of people being like, this is so easy. To turn off. Alexa is such a great tool. Obviously, you're just doing it wrong.
Doing it wrong again. Doing it wrong again. Interesting you unplugged it from the wall. You know, I would have unplugged it from the device.
She started singing Bicycle Built for Two as I unplugged it from the wall.
Daisy,
it just seemed more final Daisy, to do it at the wall.
And you clearly can't shout fire in a crowded Bitcoin blockchain and have it be considered free speech.
Are you allowed to say Bitcoin is falling?
No, there are a lot of places you cannot say that. So as I think most of us know, it is the scarcity of Bitcoin and its ability to be used as a medium of exchange outside of banks, right? They're Visa and MasterCard and the HBSC all charge fees for transferring money. And they also have all these archaic restrictions on transferring money. You can't, you know, Friday at 5, it all shuts down and it requires, even though, you know, I could take a 5-minute long video of myself eating a hot dog and send it to Australia in a blink of an eye. If you want to send me my half of the Omnibus Patreon, well, according to you and Mindy, it takes you 14 days. Now, I don't know what that's all. And it comes to me in an envelope, and it's got a scented ribbon on it.
It's still warm. Yeah, I mean, we get a lot of use out of that money in the 14 days that we are telling you it's unavailable.
You invested in Bitcoin, I'm sure. So, you know, its value is not just in its scarcity. Its value was, at least initially, that it was a new medium of exchange.
We're going to do money right this time.
That's right.
Money 2.0.
In a global sense. Now, of course, it immediately got used to sell cocaine and Ritalin on Silk Road. And that, you know, that kind of put a bad rep on it. Early because
early? I mean, isn't it still hard to use
mid?
Isn't it still hard to use Bitcoin for? Can I pay my mortgage in Bitcoin?
So here's what happened: the advocates of Bitcoin really believed that it was going to be a new media of exchange, but the problem with the blockchain was that those blocks
were off the chain.
Well, the blocks did not have a ton of capacity, and there developed a queue. As the transactions stacked up to get included in blocks and then the blocks added onto the chain, there was a choke point. And what that did was it slowed down Bitcoin transactions so that it no longer seemed, it was no longer useful, right? You'd try to buy something at a store. Visa is capable of processing 6,500 and 27 transactions per second
on each card.
And then that's right. If the Russians get a hold of your Visa card, they're going to buy 6,500 TVs. Ching. Whereas Bitcoin could only process 4.5 transactions per second.
Is this built in? Is this something built into the format? It's baked in, or is this something that could be solved with better tech?
Well, as you can imagine, the techie types said, well, they all had different ideas about how to fix this problem, and the ideas broke down into two kind of general ideas about how to solve it. One of them was that the data that was actually going into the blocks didn't need to be such fat stacks. There was a lot of extraneous data that was kind of clogging the aperture.
Streamline the blocks.
That's right. So we need to get the data smaller. The other option, as you can probably guess, make the blocks bigger. And both things...
Make the holes bigger, right? Make the tubes bigger.
Yeah, well, no, the blocks themselves, right? You're building a chain. Oh, I see. And so we've got this...
Fewer blocks in of larger size.
We've got this elegant chain. Are we going to keep the blocks the same size and put less data in them per transaction? Or are we going to suddenly halfway up the chain, enlarge the chain by either an exponential amount or double it or whatever? And so those were competing concepts. And in July of 2017, there actually was applied to it something called a segregated witness, or SegWit.
Gotta have a SegWit.
Which was a new way of verifying the transactions so that they didn't require a ton of the information to validate the transaction. Now people could just kind of witness it, and enough people witnessed it and it was validated. But there are a lot of bros involved here.
What?
Yeah. I'm afraid so. This is a bro intensive environment.
Bro rich environment.
And a lot of the early bros, a lot of the early adopters were bros. And I remember most of them. In those early days.
Certified bro.
There was a guy named Roger Ver who was known as Bitcoin Jesus, because
you could turn Bitcoins into wine.
He also had 12 disciples. But Bitcoin Jesus was a real evangelist. He was always trying to get Bitcoin to be to supplant the global money supply. He, from what I can tell, is fairly unlikable, and this is something you might be surprised to learn. There are a lot of bros that are fairly unlikable
in this particular space, in crypto, yeah. In particular,
yeah,
that's not surprising. What you'd expect.
It's surprising, but he decided that this choke point in Bitcoin, there's a lot of competition over kind of the ownership of the intellectual property of Bitcoin. Bitcoin was like
who can sell the T-shirts.
Sort of. Bitcoin was initiated. The original code was written and activated, I guess, by a mysterious character by the name of Satoshi Nakamoto. And nobody knows who Satoshi Nakamoto is.
He doesn't exist.
Well, Satoshi Nakamoto may be an elusive person who left no trail. Or left a confusing and fractured trail.
Seems difficult today.
Satoshi Nakamoto might be a group of people. Satoshi Nakamoto, there are several people that have been put forward as potentially the Satoshi.
It could be a pseudonym, right? Is that what you're saying?
Well, it's almost certainly one. There's no... No one can find
it. You can't find a Japanese census record for...
There's no list of traffic tickets. But crucially, although Bitcoin entered the world in 2009, in 2011, Satoshi disappeared. Satoshi, very definitely, the idea behind Bitcoin was that it was not controlled. It was not controlled by anyone. It was not, there was no leader. It was completely open source. And Satoshi, up until that point, until April of 2011, Satoshi continued to kind of engage. Nobody could quite track them down.
There appear to be dozens of candidates.
Yeah. But on April 28th, 2011, Satoshi stopped communicating. And April 28th is now known as Satoshi Disappear Day. Because within the Bitcoin community, there's a lot of, they're trying to create a kind of, well, like any cult, they're trying to create intellectual pedigree.
On the day when he comes back to Earth, you know, you want to be able to celebrate that as well.
Here he is, finally.
He's been in the tomb for 10 years.
Right. So back to Bitcoin Jesus, or Roger Ver.
I'm a Bitcoin Jesus.
He believed that the solution to this sort of... So what happened was, because Bitcoin was difficult to use as an actual media of exchange, it started to be used as just a repository of wealth. People sequestered it, you know, they kept it in their wallets, and their wallets gained in value, but it was now, it had primarily its value was in its scarcity, and it had lost its value as an internet,
as a medium of exchange,
a medium, right. And,
as an monetary instrument, because nobody would accept it for most goods or services.
Well,
because
it would, you know, it sometimes took 72 hours for the transaction to clear. And the thing about money is that money itself, this is like, you know, kind of a misconception that a lot of us have. Money is not wealth. Money is strictly a unit of value that facilitates the movement of wealth, which is stuff or services. And so, you know, gold is a repository of utility. You can trade gold for this. You can trade gold for that. You can trade this for that using gold. But gold itself, you know, it's useful in jewelry, and it's useful if you're going to try and coat the outside of a lunar lander.
Unlike paper money, it has other limited uses.
Limited uses.
Paper money is not ductile.
But so Bitcoin Jesus decided to start his idea was that he was going to start a separate iteration of Bitcoin called Bitcoin Cash, which was going to then be a faster, you know, built around a separate, a wider architecture. And that chain was then going to allow you to use Bitcoin Cash as you would cash.
The Bitcoin sits in your wallet, but Bitcoin Cash is your way of passing it back and forth more quickly or efficiently.
But in order to do it, he basically just built a new blockchain, and Bitcoin Cash is not really Bitcoin. It's a new crypto.
Oh, it's in parallel.
And
was this the first new crypto? No, right?
No.
There had been other attempts.
There had been other attempts. And the second most widely used and valuable crypto is Ether, which was started by a 19-year-old, you know, like pimply-faced smart kid who had an idea that the blockchain could not only it wasn't only about this sort of crypto generation, cryptocurrency generation, but you could use a blockchain to also like program in future transactions. Like on March 7th every year, you're going to give me $100 because it's John Disappear Day. And so you can put that into Ether. The blockchain it's not just a ledger of transactions. It's also a place where you can...
It's a schedule.
You can store programs, and those programs would then be activated. Or, you know, there's a great example of a Chinese dissident, a woman who was being persecuted because she reported her bosses for sexual harassment, And within China, she was severely censored, but she took her letter of accusation, encoded it, and put it into Ether. And then it was in the blockchain for eternity. So readable by anyone. And, you know, it became a,
seems like an unusual use case for a crypto blockchain.
Right. But it made Ethereum a company that seemed like it was, and the thing is they never intended Ether to be a cryptocurrency, but because of the way a blockchain works, people started to use it as a cryptocurrency. And now it is the second most valuable cryptocurrency around. And actually,
that's just by virtue of what, right place at the right time. I mean, maybe there's advantages to some of these over others, but.
Well, looking into the future, right? Like anytime you adopt a new technology, when we look back at it, it seems like the jet airplane or the steam engine or the printing press followed an inevitable course. But of course, there were always 60 different people building steam engines, and some of them required a live cat, and some of them were made out of leather. And the ones that became the dominant forms are the ones that kind of survived that period, sometimes decades, where the new technology was trying to work itself out. And initially everybody was dubious of it. Steam engine, what are we ever going to do with that? A horse will always beat a locomotive. And then eventually it works itself out. And there are a lot of people betting on Ethereum as being a more useful blockchain, still open source, although that's arguable too.
I mean, as fast as good ideas get adopted now, you know, it was different in the days of the printing press, movable type, where, you know, that's going to take a new thing like that will take decades to change a culture. We know from experience that the iPhone did not take decades to change a culture.
No,
that social media did not take decades to change a culture. I mean, I'm not saying these are good, but it seems like crypto has been surprisingly slow at this revolution it ushered in.
Yeah, and there are a lot of people arguing that crypto is will result in a global liberation. If you think about all the nations of the world where the government uses their monetary policy to control the population, or governments devalue their currency, governments restrict their currency. There are lots of examples of women in Afghanistan, for instance, whose husbands control the finances and they have no options. But there's one particular example of a woman that began to maintain a crypto account where she, you know, she squirreled away the money that came her way. And I think, you know, as part of she got people contributing to it. And eventually was able to leave her husband because she had this account she wouldn't have otherwise been able to, to put together a savings.
Under our monetary system. Seems a little cherry-picked, but okay.
I mean, there are lots of examples, and they're all sort of cherry-picked, but each used to describe this science fiction world in the future where we're not, where money and banks in particular are not agents of control. And of course, we've seen banks have also become unhinged. You know, the deregulation of them over the last 40 years has produced a Wild West in banking that has benefited only a very small proportion of the people.
But you and I would argue that that's a function of deregulation. So an utterly deregulated monetary marketplace, what would that look like?
Right. Right.
Surely untrammeled good.
And that's where we are today. So let's go all the way back to the first instance when Bitcoin was used to buy an actual thing.
Ooh, was it heroin?
It was not, although of kind.
Was it plutonium?
A kind of heroin. Not plutonium either. I don't think, I mean, There is no recorded instance of somebody buying OxyContin with Bitcoin before this moment. Bitcoin was...
It was all the subsequent transactions that are all fentanyl.
It was all Oxy after that. But in the initial days of Bitcoin, it was a dream. It was a bag inside of a suitcase. It was a hat on a hat. It was turtles all the way down. Fascinating to people as a theory. And those early Bitcoin miners, which is to say people who were performing those transactions over time on their personal computers.
I just realized we haven't even talked about the environmental impacts, but okay.
Yeah. We'll get there. They were often, they were rewarded early on with thousands of Bitcoin.
They were a lot easier to find back then.
Super easy to find.
There's a hard theoretical cap on the number of Bitcoins there can be.
There can be 21 million Bitcoins.
And almost all have been mined out of the ether.
There are a lot, although the final Bitcoin won't be mined until 2140.
Oh, okay. I'll start then. I want to get the last one.
So it's a curve on a graph.
Right.
It went up really fast and now it's curving over and it's going to be a line increasingly flat.
It's like how a final home run or something is more valuable. So I want to get the last Bitcoin and that'll be my only one.
In 2009, every 10 minutes you could mine 50 Bitcoin. 50 Bitcoin at the maximum price representing, 50 times 65,000? Go.
About 3 million, isn't it?
65,000 equals 3,250,000. So you could mine 50 of those in a minute. Now, Bitcoin started in 2009. By 2010, halfway through the year, there were a lot of people around the world kind of mining these little coins with no real sense of what their actual value was. In May of 2010, a man by the name of Laszlo Hanyets, who lived in Florida. Ultimately, this
not
is
not Hungary.
No, he's Hungarian name Floridian by
Hungarian-Floridian.
Yeah. And ultimately, this is just a Florida man story.
I mean, it kind of is when you think about, like, if these guys are right, and this is like an actual massive wealth transfer because our money systems fundamentally change. We had just completed a massive transfer of wealth to the people who were most likely to be dicking around with libertarian thought tech in 2009.
That's right.
Which is what I think that's right. That's who should get rewarded.
Yeah. And you know,
who was on 4chan in 2009?
Steve Bannon. Like he's a crypto guy. I mean, a lot of these people, a lot of them, I wonder, why are you still working? Like if you have 60 million, billion, trillion dollars, like go buy an aircraft carrier. I keep saying it.
Can they sell it? Could somebody who owns you know, nine figures in crypto, is there an easy way to, I don't know the answer to this. Is there an easy way to turn into US dollars and therefore real estate?
Yeah. Ultimately you
can find a buyer.
You find a buyer because now no one can afford one Bitcoin for even $20,000 or few people can. But you can go to your supermarket, put the money into Bitcoin Cash and buy a fraction of a fraction of a Bitcoin.
That's how those weird Bitcoin ATMs work?
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to buy $500 worth of Bitcoin, it's going to be a very small fraction of a Bitcoin, but you can add them up in your wallet. And I should say at this point that because neither of us have any Bitcoin, one of the things that kept me from doing it, I think, in 2010 was, I have to do what now? Remember a long password and keep it on a hard drive? Like, I don't know.
Well, you were wrong. Think of all those people who have millions trapped on a file because they don't have the password.
Well, I know. I mean, that's a brilliant thing. There was a guy who accidentally threw away a hard drive in Australia, and he had been mining Bitcoin for a long time, and he had something like he had 1,500 Bitcoin or more on this hard drive that's worth $150 million or, you know, not maybe more than $100 million. And it's sitting in a landfill and it's in a knowable landfill in Australia.
As long as it costs less than $149 million to get it out.
But nobody yet has decided, like, okay, I'm going to put together what it would take to sift an entire landfill, knowing what we know, which is it went in on a certain date in a certain place. And I think it was probably a lot easier 5 years ago to figure out where that was. But it's there. I mean,
luckily they don't recycle in Australia.
So. Yeah. Well, and also, I mean, I have a hard drive that just sat here on this table unmolested and it doesn't work anymore.
Every hard drive I've ever owned is like in a weird desk in my drawer in my desk.
Anyway, last night I went on and got an account on Coinbase Wallet.
Welcome to the revolution, John.
And it's under the name All the Great Shows. That's my Coinbase Wallet name.
Are you saying this because people can now just send you crypto?
Yes. We'll see. So I tried to get John Roderick. Somebody in Australia already has it. But All the Great Shows. So let's see what happens. There are a lot of crypto people that are listening to the show. If you're mad and that I'm not doing it right or mad that we're...
Why would they reward you?
...disparaging libertarianism, why don't you show me what an effective medium of exchange it is?
If your business model here is to rely on the generosity of libertarians...
Well,
I have some bad news for you.
Except some libertarians see me as a beacon of light in the darkness.
Maybe they think they can convert you. If John just gets enough free Bitcoin, he'll see that it's good.
See, that's what I'm saying.
And don't do this. Nobody send John your Bitcoin.
No. Send me some Bitcoin. You know, even a small minor little bit.
Send whatever you're going to send him to the Humane Society cause.
All the great shows at Coinbase Wallet.
Let's just send it to the rainforest.
And it's not going to do any good in the rainforest, but it is going to do, because what if I became like a super excited crypto guy? It might happen. I might be the
guy. What an evangelist John would be for your cause.
Anyway,
it's like it'd be a conversion of Saul of Tarsus.
That's right. That's exactly right. So anyway, that's all the great shows. So on this day, in May 2010, Laszlo, Florida man, was on one of the forums. And if you can believe this, there are fora devoted just to talking about crypto.
I don't believe it.
It's true.
That's crazy.
It's true.
What would you have to say?
Well, people were talking about it even 12 years ago.
I do that with U.S. currency. I'm like, hey, I got a couple quarters today, and
USDollar.org.
I think they're in the center console of my car now.
Mm-hmm.
Who else has a dollar story today?
Well, he was on a crypto blog, and he said, "I am hungry. I want some pizza, and I will give 10,000 Bitcoin." To whoever brings me two large pizzas.
At the time, what was the fair market value? What was Bitcoin trading at against the dollar?
At the time, a Bitcoin was 0.04 cents.
So, let me see, a 25th of a cent. So, 400 to the dollar. Or, no, is that what you said?
Yeah. So 10,000 coins was worth about $41.
Okay.
And he said, and this was.
That's a lot for a pizza, but.
That's a lot for a pizza, but it's two pizzas and it's delivered to your house.
Yeah, but Little Caesars does the pizza thing. So really, that's, right. You know, if you cheaped out on this guy, you could probably get, plus back then, $11 worth of pizza.
But these guys are all on these blogs. They're talking about like, oh, this is going to be the new media of exchange. And even though it's worth, you know, 0.004 cents.
And did he realize, hey, I'm the first person to ever actually try to get goods and services?
I don't think he did. Maybe he was like, let's try this out. I mean, I think that was his mentality. Look, let's see what happens. Here it is. Here's the moment. I'm going to offer 10,000 Bitcoin to the first person to bring me a pizza. And everybody was like, ha ha, that's a great idea. Nobody bit.
What?
May 19th came and went.
It's more like nobody Bitcoin. Am I right?
Lol. And he's on there like, hey, you know,
I'm still hungry.
Help a brother out.
He didn't eat anything in the meantime. It's a very unusual part of the story.
Well, and he's got a family too. He's got a family to feed. I think they kept eating, but every day he's on there like, anyone?
Still want my pizza.
The 20th of May, 2010 comes and goes. The 21st comes and goes. And he's like, seriously? And at the time, you know, they're mining Bitcoin like it's going out of style. This is 10,000 Bitcoin is nothing to this guy.
Little dwarves are swinging pickaxes.
Yeah, it's worth $40. Finally, on May 22nd.
The day before my birthday.
Oh, in 2010, how old would you have been?
I would have been 36.
Do you regret not buying Bitcoin on this day? Do you regret not flying to Florida and bringing this guy two pizzas?
I wish it had been a day later so that every year on my birthday, I could remember this amazing pioneer.
Well, remember this moment because it was the day before your birthday. A young guy by the name of Jeremy Sturdivant, who went by the handle Jerkos. Sturdivant said, you know what? I'm going to do this. He was 19 years old. He accepted the bargain. He went to Papa John's, bought two pizzas, and brought them to Laszlo, and they both, I'm sure, high-fived.
Physically brought it. They were both, yep. They were located near. One thing that limits this is the geographic, although you can order somebody a pizza.
He's another Florida man, but I think part of the gag was like, you got to bring me these pizzas.
We can go hang out. You couldn't just have his local place deliver it?
I don't know. I'm not sure what the deal was. Mm-hmm. I wasn't on Bitcoin.org at the time.
You were asleep that night.
And, you know, I would pay $40 for you not to bring two Papa John's pizzas to my house. Although, don't anybody take me up on that. If you want to give me $41 worth of Bitcoin for me to call up your local pizza parlor and send two pizzas your way, let's see if that happens. You send me the money. You send me 10,000 Bitcoin, and I'll send you two pizzas.
The problem with podcasting for people thousands of years in the future is that nobody can, you know, this is not a live stream. You know, if we were doing some esports version of Omnibus, people would just be sending us pizzas right now.
Right.
We'd be knee deep in delicious pizza.
Well, the thing is, when this airs at the end of September, if I get two pizzas then, I'm going to be just as thrilled as I would if I got two pizzas now.
But what if it's millennia hence? And they send you some glowing jellyfish equivalent of pizza.
Well, that'll be the road less traveled by.
To your cairn or your AI presence.
My AI presence is going to love pizza as much as my actual presence does now. And so this day is now commemorated May 22nd, not May 18th when the offer was made, but May 22nd is commemorated in the crypto universe as Bitcoin Pizza Day. Because it's the first moment that Bitcoin was used to actually buy a thing.
And do they commemorate it as the beginning of an era, or mm-hmm. or is it a joking reference to what the value of that Bitcoin is or would be today?
Well, so a lot of people have similar stories that Laszlo is presumably not a billion trillionaire, because at a time when Bitcoin was worth $100, it seemed like, wow,
cashed out.
Look at me. I've got $100,000 worth of coins here. In the case of Jeremy Sturdivant, or
Jerkos to his friends,
he ended up 1 year later selling his Bitcoin for $400. His 10,000 Bitcoin at that time had gone up 100%. No, had gone up times 100.
He's got to get out.
Or times 10. Durr. And he's like, wow, $400.
Best pizza I ever bought. I just got $400.
Yeah,
suckers.
So he made a bundle. And both of them, they've both been interviewed many times, they both say, you know, our idea of Bitcoin is that it's there to be used, and we, in doing this, sort of popularized it, and that was our goal.
That's what I tell myself, too.
They both kicked themselves, obviously, because 10,000 Bitcoin at the peak...
I have not done the math.
...in November of 2021 was worth $650 million.
No, I'd pay that for a pizza, but probably not Papa John's.
No.
Does it come with that garlic sauce?
I haven't eaten at a Papa John's in 1 billion years. Now the sad thing, we've been mostly supportive on this episode of millennials.
We love the millennials.
But there's
we think they slay.
We do think they slay. They are the tea. No, they are the
they're not the tea.
They spill the tea. They are on fleek.
Why do you say all like it's a French thing?
Because I spell it E-N-F-L-I-Q-U-E, en flic.
Okay.
Is that going to catch on? I think it will. No. Nobody says it anymore.
Yeah, Gen Z loves you now that you say en flic.
Here's to you.
Their newest catchphrase.
Here's to you, Gen Z. Are you familiar? You've never been to El Salvador.
I have not.
Well, the president of El Salvador is a bro. He's an El Salvadorian bro.
He's not a bro. He's a crypto visionary.
He's a millennial crypto bro.
No countries run by cryptozoologists.
No.
Who believe in...
As far as we know.
Sasquatches. But there is one run by a crypto bro.
The president of El Salvador is a young guy named Nayib Bukele. And by young, I just mean he's younger than me. He's about 40.
A world leader. That's on the young side.
He ran for president of El Salvador basically because he had a lot of Twitter followers, because he was a
business guy,
high-fiving white guy. He actually wears a baseball hat on backwards in a lot of his promo photos because he's just that kind of cool guy. His party is called the Nuevas Ideas. They're the party of new ideas. And he decided, El Salvador for many years has had, since they were run by a nationalist United States of America, CIA-funded dictatorship.
Good old days.
They decided that it was too hard to maintain their own currency, and so they were just going to peg their currency to the U.S. dollar, and then eventually just use the U.S. dollar as their currency.
It happens. I think Ecuador does it now.
Yeah. Bukele decided that El Salvador was going to make Bitcoin legal tender because he's a booster and he believes that this is the way, the truth, and the light. Now, Bukele came into power as a young, hip dude. He has increasingly become a proto-fascist. Not to say that that is what millennials would all do if they were elected the president of El Salvador, but pretty much, I think.
Pretty much every bro with a baseball cap backwards should not have an army.
Yeah, they're going. So Bukele in 2021, just last year, a year ago, September of 21.
Never forget.
He passed a Bitcoin law that made Bitcoin legal tender in El Salvador. Although something like 70% of El Salvadorans were against it, recognized that it was a dumb move. But in September of 2021, Bitcoin was worth $60,000. And Bukele put a lot of El Salvador's cash reserves, made the big play, and put it in Bitcoin with the idea that it was going to solve El Salvador's debt problems.
If it keeps bringing tenfold growth every 1 to 3 years, sure.
And
2 months after,
and El Salvador would become a crypto enclave, a crypto exclave, or a crypto a destination for crypto banking and whatnot. Right now, I mean, there are crypto banks that are dug into the hillside in Switzerland, where I don't even know what they're doing. They're storing crypto as though it's real money, but it's on hard drives. So bizarre. Anyway, Bukele put everything into Bitcoin, or if not everything, a lot of things.
Too much.
And devised a whole Bitcoin ATM system. He started a thing called the Chivo wallet. Chivo being El Salvadoran term for cool.
This guy does have some nuevas ideas.
Yeah, he does. It's a Chiro wallet. Hey, most of the population of El Salvador was like, this is a terrible idea. And as you said, just a couple of months later, Bitcoin started to decline. And then over the course of the first half of 2022, Bitcoin went from $65,000 to $19,000 in value. And El Salvador lost 60% of the value of its investment.
It's a bummer, because the great thing about crypto going down is you can actually root for it. Because generally it's the dumber people.
And Bukele has...
But here, it's the developing world now taking it on the chin because of this yo-yo.
He has doubled down on it and is like very confidently saying that he's buying the dip.
Gotta buy the dip.
Gotta buy the dip. His big idea is to...
Is it a grande idea?
It's a grande idea. And it's also Nuevas.
You should have a new party.
You know, El Salvador is a volcanic hotspot. There are a lot of old volcanoes there, and there's a lot of... steam power. I mean, one of the ways they generate power there is using
geothermal.
And so his idea was that they would build Bitcoin City. Bitcoin City, where
La Ciudad de los Bitcoin?
See, where they would have free power, eco power, to generate Bitcoins in their big geothermal steam engines.
Getting around the objection that Bitcoin's an incredibly inefficient carbon energy way to...
It's the worst. It uses so much energy to produce this tiny, you know, these little, well, when they're $65,000, it's kind of like fracking, right? Yeah. When oil is up to here,
I would never,
you do it. But
if I would never put half the Texas electricity grid in this so that everybody's AC goes out, but...
Look, if that hard drive's worth $150 million, go dig in the landfill. Hell, I'll do it.
But the problem with El Presidente's ideas here is that, you know, Bitcoin City could get all this clean geothermal energy and use it for literally anything else.
Here's the problem. Geothermal energy only produces 23% of El Salvador's energy.
Right.
And the rest is produced by either burning coal.
The dirtiest coal we could find.
Or they're importing it from other places. So it's not like geothermal is some, like, on tap amount of energy that they're just like, just, oh, we don't even just, know what to do with it. There, right. All this electricity. So right now, and this is a tragedy, El Salvador is laboring under $23 billion worth of national debt.
Bitcoin debt.
That they owe the International Monetary Fund because, of course, global banking.
I'll have it Friday or whenever Bitcoin goes back up.
So right now, Ken... As my wealth increases at my Coinbase wallet, all the great shows, and yours, because people are giving me the dip, right? They're at the dip and they're like, you know what, Roderick, Bitcoin's hardly worth a thing now. It's only $20,000. You can have $10,000 of mine.
Is this a thing that happens? A donation economy based on?
Beats me. I mean, all this is new to me.
I just think the kind of people that own Bitcoin are the least likely.
Yeah, but scarcity is relative, right?
Sure, they can give you a tiny crumb, a tiny morsel from their Bitcoin table.
I went to a party at your house a couple of weekends ago, and there were so many hamburgers on the grill. There were a lot of hamburgers. And then I noticed there was Costco hamburgers out of a bag, but still, you had made enough hamburgers.
They were all getting eaten.
Oh, they were. Everybody ate a hamburger.
Well, the problem was at the end, like, I made a batch and they all went, and I was like, oh no, I got to make 10 more. And I made 10 more, and none of those got eaten.
Yeah, right. And I, you know, I think I probably had two and I had a hot dog, but you know,
whoa.
So I,
maybe you should be contributing to my Ethereum wallet.
You know what? I'm Matt a big Damon. Dude. Don't hamburger shame me. But yeah, so I mean, to some people, one Bitcoin would be a year's wages, and to other people, 10,000 Bitcoin is just a drop in the bucket.
If you're a Salvadoreño, do not send your Bitcoin to jail.
No. But if you're a tech bro that want to prove that Bitcoin is a way to support your favorite podcaster, I will not split it with Ken, Mr. Hamburgers, Mr. Surplus of Hamburgers.
You're the Hamburglar.
Did I mention it's all the great shows at Coinbase Wallet? I have no idea whether they can actually, based on that scant amount of information,
right.
They might be laughing at me right now.
Instead,
I need a 20-digit number.
You're going to get 20 emails explaining why this is not a thing.
Here's the burden of proof. If you send me an email, you have to follow up with actual Bitcoin when I figure out how to use it.
If you don't have Bitcoins, just send me a pizza.
Yeah, or you could send Ken a pizza.
And that concludes Bitcoin Pizza Day, entry 126.jb1304, certificate number 11904, in the omnibus. Futurelings, there are a number of ways that you can support the show that do not involve John's Coinbase wallet. I would like to emphasize these as we celebrate our 500th anniversary.
All the great shows at Coinbase Wallet.
You could... You could write a nice review of us. You could.
Oh, wow. We never say that.
You could.
What a good idea. Go write to a nice review.
I feel like Apple Podcasts, we get like a nice review about once a month.
Wait, star and review. 5 stars and give us a good review. Thank you, Ken.
You don't even have to do 5 stars. Give us an honest review.
No, that's a false economy. Everything is either a 5-star or a 1-star. There's no middle.
But nobody listening at this point is going to give a 1-star.
No, but the ones that are libertarians that are like, I'm only going to give 3 stars because John doesn't know about blah, blah, blah. John pronounced
giving an Uber driver 3 stars is a little different than giving an artwork, like a podcast.
How is it different?
Because there's an economy of reviews and criticism around art and not about ride shares.
Yeah, but you know, people are going to be like, I want to listen to a podcast, and they're going to look at 10,000 5-star reviews for Joe Rogan's pile of hot trash, and then we're going to have a 4.5-star because you're encouraging people to leave us 3 stars.
No, I think you should. We have the integrity that other shows do not.
All right.
If you think this is a 4-star podcast, give us 4.
Don't do it.
If you think it's a 3-star podcast, give us 3. If you think it's a 2-star podcast, why are you listening this long? We're like well over an hour into this show.
This is the end of the show and you're still hanging on. You're all 5-star podcasts or nothing. Ride or die.
You could email us at theomnibusproject@gmail.com. You could follow various social media presences at Omnibus Project, at Ken Jennings, at John Roderick. You could send us things.
You could? You can.
I don't want to open this one because there's a lot of tape on it.
Yeah, that does have a lot of tape.
Maybe I'll open that one later. This one. I want to thank... Oh, this one doesn't even have a name. Some mystery person.
I want to thank mystery person for not putting tape on their box.
I'm going to open this and it's just going to be like, Ken, autograph my baseball. Oh, no, it is.
No, it's not.
Oh, no.
Is it really?
I thought it was an S-A-S-E, but it's not. No, it's... what? Now we're talking.
What is it?
Who is this from? There are 2 blank envelopes here.
Is it Omaha the Cat Dancer?
No, even better. Michelle...
My bell
notes that in the tweet entry, I said more Mr. Rogers than, and I was trying to think of a very tough Mr. character that would make the simile work.
Mr. Bean?
He's more Mr. Rogers than Mr. No, it has to be a tough one.
Oh, Mr. No,
see, we still can't think of one, but Michelle has done the work here and has actually crocheted us or cross-stitched us a little sampler that says, the correct answer.
Oh,
more
course.
Mr. Rogers than Mr. T.
Is that actually cross stitch or is that a picture of a cross stitch?
From across the room, it looks like a picture of a cross stitch. Up close, no. Michelle has actually cross stitched more Mr. Rogers than Mr. T.
Oh, show me that. Wow. Well, this needs to go on its own sign.
Isn't that beautiful?
Look at that. That is beautiful.
And she sent us a couple relics of a Midwestern Mr. T loving childhood, a I Pity the Fool sticker.
Yep.
And even better, the annual, I don't know why this would have an annual, of Mr. T's Saturday morning television cartoon.
Hey, hey.
Why does he have an annual? This is British.
First name, Mr.
I can tell. I used to have a Moonraker annual, which was one of these weird hardcover children's books about a pop culture property.
Those hardcover books are, Disney put out so many of those for all their properties.
But I could tell this was British the second I saw this 3000 AD ass lettering on this Mr. T comic. I think Judge Dredd's going to appear at some point.
My question here is more Mr. Rogers than Mr. T, but she didn't capitalize the M in more. So
it's a stylistic choice. Well, it foregrounds the names, surely.
But I mean, it's a sentence more than it's not, more it's a Mr. Fragment. Rogers than Mr.
What,
T.
What would the verb be in the sentence?
I'm
the implied I'm
your it. It's
that is fantastic, and I love this weird off-brand British animated Mr. T thing. I am actually taking this home. Usually I just leave junk here in your bunker, John.
Yeah, you do. Daughter's mother was saying yesterday, oh, the basement's a mess, Ken is gonna be mad, and I was like, do you see Ken's area?
Ken makes the mess.
Ken is the mess.
Look at Mr. T and the Island of Fear, this amazing adventure that he's having in a British font.
Oh, it is good. Look at that. I love a jean vest that has the sleeves ripped off. And look at this little redheaded kid. He has a matching vest.
Yeah, Mr. T in this cartoon apparently had a multiracial team of young people who he would lead on adventures, probably based on real life.
Well, what's interesting is there's an Asian girl, There's who seem someone who seems like a Latin guy. There's a African descendant person.
That's not the right way to say that.
A redheaded woman and a redheaded boy. So it's very UK. And then there's a dog with a mohawk.
Do you think in real life Mr. T gives his dog a mohawk?
Yeah. See, here's his group: Kim Makamura, Miss Priscilla Bisbee.
Is that the dog?
Nope. Spike, who's the young kid.
Why does he have a Southern belle in his...
Miss Priscilla Bisbee. And then Vince D'Amato, so he's kind of the Italian guy.
This is
and
like then, a World War II movie.
Then Garcia There's Lopez.
Finkelstein.
And then the black kid is Woody Daniels.
Okay, here's the thing about Garcia Lopez. I'm 100% sure he is named after the DC Comics books artist, Jose Luis Garcia Lopez, who did a lot of model sheets for animation in the 80s.
He looks exactly like Epstein from Welcome Back, Kotter.
That's offensive to our Latino friends.
No, they all look like Welcome Back, Kotter characters. Vince D'Amato looks like John Travolta. I don't think there was a Kim Makamura.
We'll put a picture of, there's a hacker in a wheelchair. Mm. There's a robot on a skateboard.
And then the dog's name. So the kid's name is Spike. The dog's name is Dozer. What?
Yeah. We're going to put a picture of this up on the Patreon so really you can good. Enjoy it. If in the 500 previous entries of Omnibus, you have become a loyal supporter of the show.
They're all gymnasts. Look at them. They're gymnasts.
I once saw Mr. T on a Spanish television New Year celebration in the 90s.
Nuevo ideas.
When apparently you could get him very cheap, and he had to do all these physical challenges, and the poor guy was not in any kind of condition in the mid-90s to be doing physical challenges on late-night Spanish TV.
So everybody here is a gymnast, and they're all doing gymnast activities, and there is...
Do you think that was Mr. T's own... Yes, I will let you license me for Saturday morning animation, but I must be associated with my true love, competitive gymnastics.
Maybe.
I must be hanging out with a team of agile gymnasts.
Yes. Here in the final story, this is going to disappoint you a lot. In the final story, Mr. T and the Mystery Ranch, the bad guy is a Native American in a full headdress, feathered headdress with a tomahawk, and he is fighting the gymnasts who are doing gymnastics to defeat him. I don't know if he says how at any point here.
Does seem like the mid-80s is a little late to have an evil headdress-wearing Native American villain. I mean, unless he's like an anti-hero who's like, you took my land, gymnasts.
But I feel like there were still members of the Conservative Party in Britain that were wearing them to parties at Oxford until 2005.
Yeah, it's like probably last Michaelmas. So you can see the cool things people send to us by going to our Patreon, patreon.com/omnibusproject. Look, you've gotten 500 free shows, many of you. It's time to man up.
Pony up.
This is a
you can woman up.
This
you
is,
can
this is now Bitcoin City, a libertarian paradise where nothing is free.
You can gender neutral up.
Yes, you can. What, you don't think pony is gender neutral? Oh,
no, but
man
you
up.
Said you can man up.
Oh, I see.
I mean, no, a pony. Send us a pony. Send me a pony to
your Bitcoin wallet?
To my Coinbase.
All the great shows.
Oh, also, I'm a Bitcoin maximalist. So I don't want your Dogecoin. Although if you want to send me Dogecoin, I'm fine with that too.
Would you take Ethereum?
Oh yeah. That's what Ethereum's worth bank.
Wouldn't a maximalist mean you take anything? But you're saying you won't take Dogecoin? That's a minimalist.
No, so there are people who are Bitcoin only. They're ride or die purists. Bitcoin, and they don't believe because they think all the other coins, every other crypto coin is just a scam. They're all pyramid schemes.
But you're more of a Unitarian, like, man, all these systems have something good to offer us.
Yeah, well, but Bitcoin...
I'm a crypto Unitarian.
Bitcoin's the thing. It's the big daddy. And maybe the rest are scams, but, you know, people get rich off of scams.
Not that Matt Damon one. I'm sure that one's real and
hey,
good.
Hey, take the big risk. What was his tagline?
Hey, how do you like them apples?
Hey, you would have lost a lot of money if you had done what I asked you to do.
I'm making money off this ad. Why shouldn't you?
I bet he was paid in Bitcoin, and I bet he's like, damn.
Please pay us in actual legal tender backed by a government and regulated by all the banking regulations that I promise you exist for a reason. Mm-hmm. Even though John's complaining over there about how he can't get a Western Union wire at 5:01.
There are 900 articles in Forbes magazine right now telling you that money, that the U.S. dollar is still great, and that the Bitcoin is baloney. So if you want,
I didn't mean U.S. currency. I meant Chinese money. But okay, yeah, you can send us dollars
too. What is Chinese money based on? A wing and a prayer.
Ideological purity.
That's right.
A fanatical devotion to the party.
Compatible with Maoism.
We needed, who's going to cross-stitch us a compatible with Maoism sign? Did I do all the things? So. Help us celebrate our 500th anniversary at patreon.com/omnibusproject. The futurelings are wherever you find them.
Futurelings, from our vantage point in your distant past, we have no idea how long our civilization survived. We hope and pray that the catastrophe we fear may never come. If the worst comes soon, this recording, like all our recordings, may have been our final word. But if Providence allows, we wish you many goods and cheese and hope to be back with you soon for another entry in the Omnibus.